Thinking about the war on terrorism and acknowledging that war is obsolete, by Gail Lant. The more one tries to understand the phrase war on terrorism, the less sense it makes. War has traditionally been waged against identifiable people in specific locations on the other side's infrastructure. Terrorists, people who want to create extreme fear and destabilize current power structures and situations, have too little in common with these traditional elements. People that we are currently labeling terrorists could be more accurately described as violent criminals. An international legal system could more effectively limit the activities of these criminals by bringing them to justice than by going to war and dropping bombs which kill and maim innocent people. The families of the maimed and dead then turn against the bombers, and more support for violence ensues. When Timothy McVeigh bombed the federal courthouse in Oklahoma City, no one went to his hometown and dropped bombs. Instead, the United States legal system went to work, identified him, and brought him to justice. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols are precluded from acting violently again. War isn't effective in addressing terrorism, and the human species cannot continue to go to war and ultimately survive. War as a survival mechanism is an old mode of thinking, deeply rooted in our ancient survival patterns, but made obsolete by our new environment. It is Stone Age thinking in a nuclear world. With the development of nuclear weapons, we can no longer fight any war without risking annihilation of all life, ourselves included. War has become omnicidal. War has become obsolete. War is obsolete in the same sense as the cavalry. For centuries, the horse-mounted cavalry was a critical element in the armies of all major military powers. With its speed and versatility, the cavalry could wheel and pivot, attack suddenly as weak points were discovered, and pursue a demoralized enemy who had broken ranks. The cavalry was supreme, the epitome of bravery, gallantry, and military effectiveness. With the development of the machine gun, the cavalry charge became suicidal and obsolete, but it did not immediately become extinct. As late as 1939, when Hitler invaded Poland, his tanks were met by 11 Polish cavalry divisions. The Poles were slaughtered. As with the cavalry, war has become suicidal and obsolete before it has become extinct. One can argue about the time when war became obsolete. Perhaps it was on July 16, 1945, with the first man-made cosmic explosion at Alamogordo, New Mexico. Perhaps it was on August 6, 1945, when 75,000 men, women, and children died at Hiroshima, proving that people would use these awesome weapons of mass destructions on civilian populations. Perhaps it was 3 days later, when Nagasaki proved that Hiroshima was not an isolated anomaly. Perhaps it was sometime in the 1950s, when a second nation, the Soviet Union, gained a credible nuclear arsenal. But regardless of when war first became obsolete, it clearly is obsolete today. Dwight Eisenhower said in 1957, "War in our time has become an anachronism. Whatever the case in the past, war in the future can serve no useful purpose. A war which became general, as any limited action might, could only result in the virtual destruction of mankind." all war is obsolete. Full-scale nuclear war, limited nuclear war, conventional war between the superpowers, and small wars. The potential ecological consequences of a full-scale nuclear exchange are almost unimaginable. While no one knows exactly what would happen, scientific studies have given an indication of what is likely to occur. Even a small percentage of the world's nuclear arsenal could usher in a devastating nuclear winter. Ash and dust from the nuclear explosions and from the resultant fires would block out the sun, causing sub-zero temperatures for months. Photosynthesis would cease. In the ensuing ecological collapse, humans might well disappear from the Earth. This knowledge of nuclear winter puts to rest the illusion of a successful first strike using nuclear weapons. Even if the other nation could be completely destroyed by a first strike and could never fire in return, the explosions necessary to achieve this might well create nuclear winter. The winners could die a lingering death from cold and hunger. General Douglas MacArthur, in 1961, said, "Global war has become a Frankenstein to destroy both sides. No longer is it a weapon of adventure, the shortcut to international power. If you lose, you are annihilated. If you win, you stand only to lose. No longer does it possess even the chance of a winner, of a duel. It contains only the germs of double suicide." There is no guarantee that a limited nuclear war could not escalate into a full-scale nuclear war. The stakes are too high to gamble. Morten Halperin, the former Secretary of Defense, said, "The NATO doctrine is that we will fight with conventional weapons until we are losing. Then we will fight with tactical nuclear weapons until we are losing. And then we will blow up the world." Wars exist and will continue to exist until we change our mode of thinking or blow ourselves up. Because each small war has some chance of escalating into the ultimate disaster, there are only those two possibilities. Continuing to wage war guarantees our inevitable extinction. Our only salvation is to abandon all war. To survive in our new environment, we must now reject war in all its forms, absolutely, forever. We must make this total, seemingly risky shift in our thinking, because we have no other choice. Since the unleashing of the atom, everything to do with war, security, strength, survival, and power, has changed irrevocably. Only our thinking is still the same, rooted in 10,000 years of waging war. Even our language about war is obsolete. If something can destroy millions of people in a fraction of a second, is it merely a weapon? If a brief nuclear exchange can destroy the entire life support system of the planet, is it merely a war? Or is this omnicide, the killing of everything? The possession of weapons must be seen for what it is, a temporary stratagem on our path to a world beyond war, and treat it accordingly. Far from viewing weapons as a temporary measure, our current thinking places our ultimate faith in them, so we are not really seeking other possibilities and will not find them. In an ironic twist of fate, we decrease our strength, our security, and our power as we continue our pre-nuclear survival strategy in the nuclear age. Instead of a plan for mutually assured destruction, We need a plan for mutually assured survival. Read by Eileen Hannah.